Welcome to Conspiracy Theory with your host, Earl Benezet. And I have a special guest this evening, William J. Bill Burns, who you probably know from UFO Hunters. Bill is an American writer, editor, book publisher, and literary rights agent. He's best known as an active publisher of UFO literature, UFO magazine, and as a New York Times best-selling author. He holds a law degree and received a PhD from New York University in 1974, along with Detective Dr. Robert Keppel. Burns co-authored The River Man, about how serial killer Ted Bundy helped police track down the Green River Killer, Gary Ridgway. The book was broadcast into a made-for-TV film on A&E in September 2004. Of course, he headed up a team of investigators in a weekly series, which I just mentioned, UFO Hunters, on the History Channel. Each week, he and his team of researchers traveled to the sites of world-famous UFO events, where they used high-tech equipment, cutting-edge investigative techniques to explore the encounter and arrive at answers about what really happened. Anyway, let's cut to the chase, Bill. I'm sure you're busy today. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What got you interested in UFOs more than just anything other than, you know, most of the other things you're doing besides writing?
Well, I mean, I had a UFO sighting myself when I was really a little kid living in New York City, and that, you know, that came right during the 1950s, those summers of the saucers, during those saucer crazes, mm-hmm. when everybody was seeing flying saucers, and I saw one too. And of course, growing up in the 1950s, you are awash in some of those fabulous feature films, like Invaders from Mars and This Island Earth, and, you know, The Man from Planet X, and
Dead Year Stood Still.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So you're growing up with those, the Blob. You're growing up with those films, and it really makes an impression. And then in 1994. I was working as a rights agent, as literally a literary rights agent. That was my job mm-hmm. for a motion picture company, and they had just optioned the rights to the life story of Philip Corso and asked me basically to look at the material, talk to him, and see if I could basically see what kind of book could be developed. And that turned out to be Day After Roswell, and my publisher, where I published The River Man all the way back in 1995, The River Man, my publisher was Simon & Schuster, and they said, you know what, we'll do the book if we could have that book released officially on the 50th anniversary of Roswell in July 1997 at the Roswell Conference, but you have to write it. You've got to write it in, you've got something like 9 months to write this book, and it was a voluminous amount of material. So mm-hmm. after the book came out and hit the New York Times bestseller list for most of the summer of 1997, the then owners of UFO Magazine had did an interview with me, and they asked me if I could, the magazine was in financial trouble, deep financial trouble, and mm-hmm. they asked me if the motion picture company that I'd worked for on setting up Day After Roswell could make an investment in the magazine. And I basically put, because I'm a rights agent, that's my job, right. I literally put together a term sheet in which the whole point of the magazine was as a literary rights magnet and as a intellectual properties magnet for all these UFO stories. The motion picture company liked it, bought the magazine, took over the operation, made me the publisher, and then after 5 years said, look, we're still losing money, we don't know how to run a magazine, we make movies, we don't publish magazines, we're going to shut it down. And so I said, well, you know, I'll tell you what, you have all these people who, magazine's been around for 20 years, you know, you really can't, you know, it's terrible to shut it down. This was 2003, it was coming up on mm-hmm. 20 years. And I said, what you should really do is, you know, why don't you give me a shot at publishing it? Because my wife is a magazine editor. That's what she does. She's been doing that since she was kind of a young newlywed in her 20s, publishing a national magazine, being the editor of it. And nobody knows magazines more than she does. And so I said, oh, I would turn the operation over to her. And sure enough, he said, give me a buck. I gave him a buck. The magazine was mine. basically turned it over to my wife, Nancy Hayfield, who's the editor-in-chief of the UFO magazine, and literally she turned around the operation in 1 year, and
wow.
It's been pumping away ever since.
Talk about fortuitous timing.
Yeah.
In every which way you could think of. Well, I'm glad you stuck with it, and I mean, you've done a great job on UFO Hunters. I haven't seen all the episodes. Matter of fact, I just downloaded just now 30 of the episodes.
Wow.
That I could, because I've got 8.3 terabytes on this machine right here. So I'm crazy when it comes to computers. I used to work for IBM up in New York for 18 and a half years. I was born and raised in Manhattan. So I kind of missed. I was born actually in Manhattan at New York Hospital, and lived on 87th Street right off Central Park West. And,
okay, I was born in Manhattan, right around the corner from St. John the Divine in Columbia.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, right on Amsterdam Avenue.
Wow.
So I was walking distance to where I went to school.
Yeah. I went to, what was it, PS 166 on 89th Street, and then went to junior high school 118 on 93rd Street. And then I went, I went to a vocational school. I shouldn't have done that because that kind of messed up my academic career, and ended up not getting a college degree that way. But I did go at night, although I didn't get a degree. Went at night to NYU, then moved upstate New York.
Which division of NYU?
Well, it was just night classes. It wasn't anything.
Continuing ed?
Yeah, that's all it was.
Yeah.
And I took.
NYU,
You went to NYU too?
I did.
Well, you got the degree. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, my PhD is from NYU. And so when were you at NYU? What year?
Wow, that's a good question. I want to say the 60s.
Yeah, that's when I was there.
Wow. You know, I've probably seen around New York, and I didn't know at the time who you were, of course, because hadn't seen you on TV yet.
Well, my parents moved out. As I said, we lived up on Amsterdam Avenue, right above Cathedral Parkway, and my parents moved to Queens in 1949, and so I actually grew up in Forest Hills and went through the public school system in Forest Hills, graduated Forest Hills High School. And, so that was my experience. So even though I was born in Manhattan, I really turned out to be a Queens kid. And then my first job, we're not talking about conspiracies, but who cares? My first job was when I was in graduate school at NYU, I got a job at Trenton State College. And so basically New Jersey became my adopted state because that was my first like career move in 1968. Was in moving to New Jersey and teaching at Trenton State, which I did for a long, long time, and then finally left there when I'd gotten a job at a publishing company in Princeton, because we lived in Princeton, and I got a job at a publishing company in Princeton, and my wife Nancy was going to Princeton at the time, and I basically saw the opportunity. I sold a couple of books. I was really kind of a neophyte agent. I was really a college professor.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold a couple of books, reference books, to McGraw-Hill, and then they hired my wife and me to edit the book for them as book
wow.
packagers, as book producers. And really, that launched our first company, which we still have today, called Shadow One Press. And we basically produce books for publishers, and we've been doing it ever since 1982. And then I left the college in 1983 and moved to California in 1990 to package rights for motion pictures.
Wow. Maybe someday I can talk to you about maybe everybody has told me I need to write a book because I have a lot of knowledge about UFOs, crop circles, chemtrails, aliens, abductions, you know, you name it. I get into chemtrails too because, I mean, how can you not notice? So many people, they look up and they don't know what they're looking at.
Right, exactly. You know, you see these things. You know, a lot of them are contrails. You really have to draw a distinction between what constitutes a chemtrail, what constitutes a contrail, and a chemtrail. What's the line between them? And then what constitutes, there are these jet propulsion systems, which we've been experimenting with. And I forget the technical name, but with the vapor trail that they emit are these puffs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's a kind of a jet engine that we have. And, you know, Bill Scott's probably from Aviation Week. He's the expert on those.
Ooh, I just realized we need to take a break. I hate to cut you off, but we'll be right back in just a minute or two with Conspiracy. So hold on to your hats.
What is this?
This is the Desert Heat. Desert Hot Springs, California.
What if it wasn't always about getting ahead? What if you didn't care about being on the fast track? What if your career goals were to change? Instead of flying off to the big interview, what if you flew somewhere else altogether? To embark on a different track? To volunteer in ways you never dreamed of? In places you never imagined yourself being? Like a tiny island in the Pacific, barely visible on a map, but where needs are easy to see. Or a village on the African continent, where just a little training in HIV awareness can change the fate of thousands. What if you decided to share your skills with others and help someone else get ahead? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Get ready. Everything you thought you knew will be challenged.
Why that approach to telling a story like that?
Well, it makes people, I think, wake up to the coverage that's going on. Because, you know, NASA's, the Space Act says that NASA, if you find something that's considered to be against the security of the United States, you don't have to be told.
Conspiracy with Earl Benazet.
And they were going somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 to 14,000 miles an hour.
They covered the distance from Columbus to Detroit in something like equivalent of about 20,000 miles an hour.
It's the mothership of all conspiracy programs.
Conspiracy Theory, every Friday evening at 7 p.m. with your host, Earl Benazet, right here on KDHS 98.9 FM, the Desert Heat.
Tired of those annoying calls? Afraid to deposit money into your bank account? Facing foreclosure? Do bill collectors have you feeling like a bad person?
Yeah.
Put a stop to it all with one visit with Lisa at Immigration Court Services of the Desert. Serving Desert Hot Springs since 2001, Immigration Court Services of the Desert is your one-stop shop for all your legal needs. Bankruptcy, divorce, child custody and visitation, evictions, small claims, immigration and notary public. Give Lisa a call, 760-333-6852. That's 760-333-6852. Se habla en español.
We are. 98.9 FM, the Desert Heat.
Well, we're back with Conspiracy Theory and my special guest, Bill Burns. And, well, we were just discussing offline here about some effects on population and what we have to do about it. And what were some of your views, Bill?
Well, I think, you know, talking about conspiracies, obviously people look for the kind of singularity moment in conspiracies, like the one big thing, like the one moment in time, the element from which all these things emanate. And, of course, I think that there's always been, ever since the beginning of human civilization, this conspiracy of one social group or a social group trying to gain dominance over other social groups to keep for themselves, hoard for themselves, as many resources as they possibly can. I mean, I think that's something that goes on. It's not really a conspiracy. Everybody who's ever written about the political history of human civilizations has pointed to that fact. So, I mean, that's not a big issue. That's an ongoing issue. But when you feed that strife, that conflict with, let's just say, something of an emergency, which is that at a certain point, because of the advancement of human technology, I mean, remember, human beings lived on planet Earth for thousands and thousands of years, and we did it through various civilizations, and civilizations rose and civilizations fell. They were wiped out by plague, by famine, by all kinds of diseases, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they had no means of coping with it. I'm not even getting into alien extraterrestrial intervention. I'm saying mm-hmm. just absent any consideration for extraterrestrial intervention, civilizations rose and fell. Then along about, after, let's just say, middle 1600s, in the middle 1600s, after the last of the great London fires wiped out the kind of the plague generator on the London docks, after that, there were tremendous advancements in industrialization and the socialization of Western European countries. Again, I'm not talking about Asia or Eastern European countries. I'm talking right. about basically our first world countries. And suddenly the population began to expand. It expanded to the point where in the 19th century in Charles Dickens' London, in Victorian England, the pollution was so bad because, among other things, the amount of waste in terms of coal, for example, particulate matter, being spewed into the air in concentrated cities was killing so many people. So when you put various things into effect to correct that, and they have the technology to do it, now there are whales back in the Thames Estuary, for example, when you do that, suddenly the population begins to expand, and it starts expanding aggregately, not, you know, certain ethnic groups over others, but I mean aggregately, more than there's population die-off. And around the 19th century, people looking at what Malthus was saying is that at a certain point, the Earth will not be able to sustain the population of human beings on it. And we now predict that period of unsustainability, and when I talk about unsustainability, I don't mean a few tweaks here and a few tweaks there, you know, some soil and green, stuff like that, human beings can survive. I mean irrevocable, irreversible unsustainability would be 10 billion people living on the surface of planet Earth. Well, is that like very far in the future? No, that's less than 90 years from now. That's 2100. My great-grandchildren will live to see that. Maybe my grandchildren will live to see it. They'll be very old. But the point is that that time is upon us. And what do we do about it? Well, add that emergent issue, and it is urgent, to this issue of one social group or social class trying to gain dominance over another, and that becomes kind of a critical mass, because then what do you do to kind of keep the population, A, under control, and keep the population under control in certain sectors where you want your social group to survive?
Exactly.
Now
yeah.
you could see this conspiracy begin to shape. I mean, quite frankly, what you do is you find ways to, and you find ways to do that that are economically viable. So you don't just come in with a plague and wipe out one-third of the population, which is what happened in Europe in the 14th century. What you do is you try and find ways to keep the population culling, the population control, so to speak, under the radar. So let's just say that, for example, you know there are certain diseases that are slate killers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't cure them. You remediate them, and you remediate them using as many taxpayer dollars as you possibly can, so that the very people who are suffering from those diseases are the ones paying to remediate them. I mean, and so you extend this. So this is why you see things like the Ebola virus. Is that an experiment in slate cleaning in certain areas? AIDS suddenly cropping up,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a whole infrastructure for controlling it. Cancers, various kinds of cancers, a lot of which are environmental. So when you begin looking at these things, and you begin looking at various ways that our own industries that are making money for certain groups, those industries themselves are creating situations in which you see culling of the population sectors. And if I were, and this does not take a massive worldwide millions of person conspiracy to affect, this could be really, this could be a very small group of very well-connected individuals who can push the right buttons in the right places. And you look at the various industries that are involved. So you look at certain kinds of genetic manipulation of foods, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know what's really in the genetic manipulation of those foods. We now have the technology to create genetic time bombs.
Add to that, Bill, one thing. I've noticed that they've made these new seeds, they've made them so that they're not being bothered by aluminum and barium that we get from the clouds. And I was wondering why, the phony clouds, the man-made stuff, and I was wondering why it makes sense. You don't want the whole population to die, so you're going to make money at the same time doing this, but at the same time keep alive the population that you want to keep alive.
Exactly. So, when we were in UFO Hunters, we saw some of the underground facilities that, at least in one case, this was built in West Virginia, and it was to house Congress during the time of a nuclear attack. Well, there are other facilities like this to house certain sectors of the population. Some say that underneath the Denver National Airport, that whole area that was built is kind of like an automatic baggage handling system. The most, those underground facilities really are to house elements of the New World Order. And I'm sure there are these things around the world. We also know that the communications technology is unbelievable. Look at how we were able, just an example of this, just a minor outcropping of how capable we are, as this phone call itself is being tapped. We were able, the NSA, no such agency, mm-hmm. was able to pick up a blurb of a phone call, a cell phone call, from someone who they believed to be, because they'd extracted this information during interrogation at Guantanamo, mm-hmm. of the courier of Osama bin Laden. Okay, it was a quick down and dirty, but they were able to use that quick conversation, and they even recorded it. And that recording, the transcript is online, so folks can see it. It was from a friend saying, "Hey, Asif, how are you? What's happening? What are you doing? Oh, I can't talk right now. I'm running around. To call me back later." Okay, fine. Beep. That's all they needed. They had the PIN number of that cell phone, and unless the guy either took the battery out of that cell phone or disposed of the cell phone, he was now trackable. So they mm-hmm. used that tracking on that pin to track him all the way back to this one section of Abbottabad in Pakistan, and believing from satellite surveillance that that compound looked a little too suspicious, they were able to set up a safe surveillance house near enough to track the comings and goings, and before you knew it, and that's how they found Osama bin Laden. The point that I'm trying to make is our communications ability
it's fantastic.
To track this stuff is beyond belief. And we saw one of those platforms, by the way, above Las Vegas all the way back in 2007 in our first season of UFO Hunters, which tracked us, picked up a cell phone text message that I sent back to my wife, Nancy, that we found something in the sky, shut it down, took it down below the horizon. I don't know how they did that unless they've got anti-gravity technology. Took it down below the horizon, waited until we left, and then brought it back up again. And as one person, a former editor of the Rocky Mountain Bureau at the Aviation Week said, they read your license plates. They knew exactly who you were.
I tell people, if we can see a planet 35 light years away with the Hubble, they can tell if one hair on your head is diseased.
That's right. So there are all these kind of sub rosa reasons for we basically engage in a search for planets in the hospitable zone in nearby star systems.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. because we are a race of explorers, human beings. You know, why do you want to go to the moon? Because it's there. Why do you want to climb Mount Everest? Because it's there. I mean, all these things are great, but let's face it, another reason for all this is you know that at a certain point there'll be too many people on planet Earth. So you have this combination. You try to find in 90 years a planet you can feed, right?
Yep. Well, especially when the, you know, the answer to the Arecibo message, have you seen that?
Yeah.
At Chilbottom? I mean, it talks about a civilization that had 12.3 or 12.4 billion people. At the time, we had 4.3. But when you see on the documentation, it shows that they're on two planets and a moon. Hint, hint. And we're not. We're all one planet.
Exactly. So, I mean, one thought would be, how do you colonize a planet in such a way? Then, if you're going to colonize a planet, how do you colonize a planet in such a way that you've made deals with whatever culture is nearby that don't want you as an infestation on its planet? So, I mean, when you think about this stuff, I mean, are we going to find, as we explore what's going on the moon of, on the Cassini moon of Saturn, are we going to find what's going on in Io or Europa or places or moons like that, way stations for human beings to colonize within, I mean, let's face it, we're not suddenly going to go to Zeta Reticuli eight light years away or whatever in the space of a lifetime. What we're going to do is try and create stations along the way where human beings can settle, they can colonize, the purpose being to become our own Battlestar Galactica going out into the universe. Do I think we're going to be attacked by Cylons? No.
I hope not.
But what I really think is going to happen is that at a certain point, if you look at what Arthur C. Clarke wrote in 2001 Space Odyssey, that we will be able, we have the now, able to create a computer in which if you program it the way computers are programmed, with this unrelenting, amoral logic, one of the decisions that that computer is going to be, if you want to sustain planet Earth, one way to sustain planet Earth is to get rid of the human beings that are destroying it, you're going to have your Terminator. You're going to have that moment in time when the machines, using the very logic we programmed into it, into them, are going to look to destroy us. But are they going to come with these monsters, these kind of insectoid creatures zapping us? No. They're going to create various kinds of diseases, various kinds of infestations in our food. And I think that's what we're looking for over the next century. You're going to see more and more slate-cleaning, planet-cleaning types of diseases crop up. And you're going to see industries crop up ostensibly to control those diseases, but literally to drain money from taxpayers to pay for the very things that the people creating those diseases are doing. And I think that's one of the large conspiracies, a singularity conspiracy, if I can say that.
Yeah.
It's called the cleansing of planet Earth, the reducing of the human population in various sectors, and yes, it's racist, and yes, it's social, and yes, it's ethnic, to manageable population sectors, while at the same time looking for ways to get human colonies off planet Earth, to strike whatever deals we can with any hostile extraterrestrial entities out there, so that we're not in conflict with them. And I think that's what you will see that.
Definitely, I agree. I agree 100%, although I do believe that we already are on Mars and we've been there probably since the 60s, because I believe in that theory of alternative three, that we're worried about a nuclear exchange destroying what we now call the human genome, turning us into Morlocks like in the movie The Time Machine, in a more or less kind of way, and that we asked them at the time to take 300 men and women from Britain. Now, supposedly, there are 300 men and women from Britain that are missing since then. Is it true? I can't prove it. Is the Eisenhower granddaughter telling the truth that they tried to get her in a program for 3 years to go to Mars? I don't know. are we on the far side of the moon mining helium-3 with the aliens? Very possibly, because we need the technology. We need the energy.
Well, I have to tell you that at least two people, who to me are credible, have said that they have seen artificial structures on the moon.
Yep, that I know.
From NASA sources. One of them is Donna Hare, who worked for NASA.
Yep.
And she said that she was actually there when somebody in the photo processing unit
showed it to her, yeah.
Was airbrushing out, because NASA didn't have digital photography techniques at the time.
Yeah, we get rid of these little pesky little aliens, as she said.
Yeah, getting rid of that spaceship that was in a crater, that was one. And then another person who did not have a security clearance to do this, but was in the Air Force as a tech, he was a techie in the photo processing. He was a maintenance guy on the photo processing machines, the developing machines, so that when they would send a signal, and the signal would go to a photo processing machine to develop certain prints, right?
Right.
It was his job to maintain those machines. That was his job.
Right.
So,
and he showed up on, you're talking from the Disclosure Project briefing, these guys actually spoke on, he did and so did she.
Right.
But go ahead, I'm sorry.
And so the story was that he was at an Air Force base and got this, and he was one of the only guys on weekend duty, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was downtime for most people. The machine broke, and they basically asked him, they said, look, we need you to get over here and see what the problem is. And he says, oh, well, I'll probably have to take it back to the shop. What can I do? He goes over there and he's noticing at this part of the base, it's unlike any other part of an Air Force base. He's seeing Asians, he's seeing people who are speaking Russian, he's saying, what are these strange people doing here?
This is our bumper music to tell us we've got to take a break, unfortunately, in the middle of this. But we'll be right back with Conspiracy and Bill Barnes, and I can't wait to hear the rest of this.
What is this?
This is the Desert Heat. Desert Hot Springs, California.
What if it wasn't always about getting ahead? What if you didn't care about being on the fast track? What if your career goals were to change? Instead of flying off to the big interview, what if you flew somewhere else altogether? To embark on a different track? To volunteer in ways you never dreamed of? In places you never imagined yourself being? Like a tiny island in the Pacific, barely visible on a map, but where needs are easy to see. Or a village on the African continent, where just a little training in HIV awareness can change the fate of thousands. What if you decided to share your skills with others and help someone else get ahead? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Get ready. Everything you thought you knew will be challenged.
Why that approach to telling the story like that?
Well, it makes people, I think, wake up to the coverage that's going on, because, you know, NASA's, the Space Act says that NASA, if you find something that's considered to be against the security of the United States, you don't have to be told.
Conspiracy with Earl Benazet.
And they were going somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 to 14,000 miles an hour.
They covered the distance from Columbus to Detroit in something like the equivalent of about 20,000 miles an hour.
It's the mothership of all conspiracy programs.
Conspiracy Theory, every Friday evening at 7 p.m. with your host, Earl Benazet, right here on KDHS 98.9 FM, the Desert Heat.
Tired of those annoying calls? Afraid to deposit money into your bank account? Facing foreclosure? Do bill collectors have you feeling like a bad person?
Yeah.
Put a stop to it all with one visit with Lisa at Immigration Court Services of the Desert. Serving Desert Hot Springs since 2001, Immigration Court Services of the Desert is your one-stop shop for all your legal needs. Bankruptcy, divorce, child custody and visitation, evictions, small claims, immigration and notary public. Give Lisa a call, 760-333-6852. That's 760-333-6852. Se habla en español.
We are.
We are.
98.9 FM, The Desert Heat.
Well, we're back with Conspiracy Theory and Bill Barnes, and it's getting really interesting, folks. What do you think? Go ahead, Bill.
Well, what I'm talking about is the situation where this person was called. He was an airman. I'm not going to use his name because he's now a psychologist in private practice. So he was called specifically for repairing this photo processing machine that ostensibly was downloading and then processing photographs from of the moon. And so he basically goes in there and he's looking at what he can do. And he says, geez, you know, problem is that I can't, my tools aren't here. My tools are back at the shop. You know, so
he brought the machine outside, right?
he's talking to this one person who is the, this one person is the guy in that unit. And so he says, look, I mean, I don't want to be a buzzkill here, but I have to tell you, I've got to take this machine back. Oh, you can't, man, this is like tops. This is a machine that can't leave. He says, well, what do you want me to do? If you want the machine fixed to get the photos out of it, there's only one way for me to do it, and that's to take the machine back. So I can take it back. I cannot take it back. Your choice. So the guy says, oh, okay, fine. You know, I'm not going to argue with you. Take the machine back. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So he does. But the guy goes with him because he can't let the machine out of his sight. Well, they get this thing back to the shop. And in the shop, he fixes it. And suddenly these photos start coming out. And they're the weirdest photos you can imagine. They're photos of what look like a factory. And, you know, he doesn't say anything. He's, you know, this is not an issue of, oh, you know, Tony. Mm-hmm. He looks at this thing, and it's clearly a factory. And so the other guy, who thinks that this person has security clearance, says, how about that? Look at our factory on the moon. And this guy looks at him, I have to tell you, he said in utter shock, what do you mean our factory on the moon? And these are not structures, by the way. He was savvy enough, he'd seen enough photos to know what our things look like. These were not structures that were structures that he recognized as ours. Okay, as built by human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically he says, what do you mean? And he says, well, these are their structures. Their meaning, these are structures that the extraterrestrials have.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy looks at this other airman in such shock, I'm telling you, that the airman suddenly realizes the person who just downloaded these photos didn't have the security clearance to see them.
Wow.
So he actually says to him, look, dude, I can get killed for this. I mean, I can actually get killed for this. Please don't tell anybody you saw these. And the person didn't say anything for years. But as you correctly point out, years later, he revealed this story to us at UFO Magazine. We had a great conversation with him. And in fact, this was an article in UFO Magazine about mm-hmm. this.
Right.
He's been on various History Channel shows. And, of course, this was part of the Disclosure Project, where he and Donna Hare from NASA, also on UFO Hunters, but he and Donna Hare from NASA also talked about ways that the government has covered this up. So when you say we have bases, I mean, we've actually heard eyewitness testimony, right,
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
evidence that we have bases in places we shouldn't have bases.
Yep. And I believe we're working with some of the aliens underground, of course, in our underground bases, and possibly under the ocean, deep down. We know they're there. I mean, when you have a guy who used to tell the head of the Pacific Fleet it was his job to give him new information, one morning he tells him, well, you know, we just saw this thing come out of the water about a mile away, and it was the size of an aircraft carrier, kind of hovered for a second and took off. Half an hour later, came back down next to us and went back into the ocean. And the head of Pacific Sea said, okay, what else do you have? Kind of like, oh, yeah, I know about that. So next.
Right. I mean, yeah, a lot of people in the military who know about this are basically told, look the other way, don't acknowledge it, because there is a group working. Some of them are military, some of them are not. I mean, all you've got to do is listen to what Edgar Mitchell has publicly said, mm-hmm. that he said, look, I've been told, and you want to know who told him, but he said, right. I've been told that not only are extraterrestrials a reality, but that we've been working with extraterrestrials, working with them, yeah. and they're, you know, that's part of, like, our arrangement, that we have an arrangement with them. So he said it, and then various people, even before Edgar Mitchell, he was not the first,
right.
various people before Edgar Mitchell, George Hoover, who's the guy who investigated the Philadelphia experiment for the Office of Naval Intelligence all the way back in the 1960s, revealed two things to me. One, that that people in the military, this was after the Corso book came out, day after Roswell, that he absolutely knew about UFOs and extraterrestrials, and he said most people in the military know about it, and there's a group that's kind of in a loop about this, so the fact that there are UFOs aren't the big shocker. The big shocker is that the creatures that we are somehow related genetically to these creatures, we have the same abilities and sensory abilities that they do, only we don't know how to use them. And
yeah.
How is that? That's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Imagine that, and then imagine a government wanting to control that, because how can human beings, and I'll give you one example, how can human beings evolving physically beyond their ability to control certain kinds of sensory powers that they have, because there's kind of, let's say, evolution doesn't always happen as nicely as you want it to, right?
Exactly.
Right? Your physiology may evolve to a certain point, but your spiritual abilities, let's just say, are not evolved. You're still more animal than you are a higher creature.
Right.
And so you're going to respond to, let's say, parts of your brain, in the amygdala, in various older parts of your brain, you're going to respond to those, fight or flight, mainly fight, more, because you can't control them, kind of like that whole allegory of the Vulcans on Star Trek, right? They have to evolve to a purely rational, logical society to keep the animal nature, the Romulan nature, so to speak, in check. Well, that could be us, and that's not far-fetched.
Mm-hmm.
And hence, what you're seeing is a way for an elite, and I do mean an elite, using financial means, using biological means, using high-tech means, chemical means, psychological means, to keep what could be a human race that has enormous cerebral powers, keeping those untapped. You, like, you feed it with junk food, right?
Mm-hmm.
You feed it with so much hydrogenated fats, because like dogs will go for the gravy on top of the kibbles, right? So you feed us with that hydrogenated fat, you feed us with everything bad to create certain diseases to keep our lifespan nice and short, right? Keep it around 80, 90, you know, 70, this is great, right? Find ways to cut off medical help so we die off sooner. In other words, if you look at what's going on and the political fights that are going on, you realize that if you kind of lump them together, what's going on is this calling of the human race. You say, well, why? And one reason might well be that what we know about who we are in certain circles is so devastating to an elite. And the other thing that this guy, George Hoover, mentioned to me was that, of course, he was on a surveillance cruiser, a scout ship, out in the Pacific off Pearl Harbor in December 1941. They saw the Japanese fleet. They radioed back that there was a Japanese aircraft carrier fleet approaching Pearl, and they were told, keep it quiet, don't say a word. So in other words, we sat for...
Right.
We allowed the attack on Pearl Harbor to get us into World War II.
Yep. And I say about, you know, of course, the World Trade Center. How do you have a plane with a body about, what, less than a quarter of an inch thick, go through 287 columns of solid steel and come out the other side? Give me a break.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
And, it's all about money, power, and control.
Of course. And then ask yourself, why is it that in the a short time before all that, the group that owned the World Trade Center reinsured the thing
A lot of money.
I mean, this is the insurance group way, the Swiss insurance company.
And then he gets the money for both buildings as two different incidences.
Yes, and here's the thing. You know that the World Trade Center, the land was more valuable than the buildings, because the buildings, when they went up, look, I was living in Manhattan then. When those buildings went up, remember that the construction trades were controlled by organized crime families, literally the Genovese family.
Right.
And they were putting up sub-grade materials in a lot of the buildings going up. They controlled the construction.
But not those buildings. Not those towers.
Well, what I'm saying is the towers, when you look at the value, the land is more valuable than the structure.
Well, true.
So how do you get rid of this and the demolition of those things? You couldn't have demolished them. There's no way to demolish those towers. What are you going to do, right? Well, the one way, of course, is a controlled explosion.
Yep.
But imagine what it would have taken the cost for a controlled explosion to demolish.
I believe it was some kind of a strange nuclear weapon that was fired up, or it was a particle weapon from space.
Well, look, the fact is that the testimony of various people who were there in the building, I mean, these were recorded. This is
right.
Not something that I'm saying, oh, I heard a rumor.
Right.
I heard the tapes. That these tapes said let's lay some foundation here. As you know, when there is a major, because you're a New Yorker just like I am, from Manhattan, so you know that there is a radio band called Citywide Band.
Right.
And Citywide Band, you can pick it up, by the way, if anybody who wants to go out and get a police scanner. So this is like, folks, you can do this yourself, right? This is here's the inexpensive
right.
way. Go get a police scanner, or if you have any smartphone, go to whatever app store is there and download for free something called Police Scanner. And if you look around, you will see that you can get on that police scanner the frequency for New York City Citywide. Citywide is when there's a five alarmer, okay, and you've got police and fire linked together. They jump over to Citywide Band, and Citywide Band is for major catastrophic things. Well, on that Citywide Band were the conversations inside the building of firefighters who were going up to rescue people after the planes hit. And those conversations were, they were down in the basement and they were hearing explosions in the basement. They were hearing explosions in the basement. And remember, in 1993, there were explosions in the basement when Ramzi Youssef,
right,
and that blind sheik tried to bring the buildings down.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew there was a planned attack on the World Trade Centers. We knew, because we captured Randy Youssef's computers from Indonesia, we knew that not only had he tried to set up using planes as bombs all the way back in the 80s, we knew that was part of his plan. So just like, you don't need to be Sherlock Holmes to put two and two together.
Exactly.
They were after the World Trade Center. They'd already bombed it in 1993. They'd already tried to use planes as bombs all the way back in the 80s. They were planning it now. We had the intel from the computers. Add to that the fact was, so add to that that you knew in advance the World Trade Center's from 8 years earlier were a target. Now, if I own the World Trade Center property and I knew that my buildings were actually worth less than my land, okay? Mm-hmm. And I knew that, boy, the one way to get the insurance money is kind of this major act of war that would take the buildings down. So two things happen for me, right? Two things happen. One, I get paid for doing something that would cost me money to do in the first place, demolish the building, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two, I get to have my land back so I could build something on it. Three, I get to blame the whole thing on somebody else.
Yep. Right? And then four, other people get to make money, like on American Airlines stock and yada, yada, yada.
So you put those together, and if I knew in advance this was coming up, what I would do is hire some security company, some demolition company, to get in there under the guise of what? Inspecting for fire, putting in a new burglar alarm, doing this, doing that. If I knew that, I would have explosive charges planted in that building without telling anybody, so in time of emergency, I could bring that building down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I then worked
But what explosive can turn everything to dust? I mean,
I'll
steel to dust.
I will tell you, the weight...
Oh, and you know what? We got to hold that thought because we have to take this break, unfortunately.
Okay,
and we'll be right back.
I got people coming.
Okay, I just got 7 more minutes of the show, and then we'll go.
Tell me what to start.
What is this?
This is the Desert Heat. Desert Hot Springs, California.
What if it wasn't always about getting ahead? What if you didn't care about being on the fast track? What if your career goals were to change? Instead of flying off to the big interview, what if you flew somewhere else altogether? To embark on a different track? To volunteer in ways you never dreamed of, in places you never imagined yourself being. Like a tiny island in the Pacific, barely visible on a map, but where needs are easy to see. Or a village on the African continent, where just a little training in HIV awareness can change the fate of thousands. What if you decided to share your skills with others and help someone else get ahead? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Get ready. Everything you thought you knew will be challenged.
Why that approach to telling the story like that?
Well, it makes people, I think, wake up to the coverage that's going on, because, you know, NASA's, the SpaceX says that NASA, if you find something that's considered to be against the security of the United States, you don't have to be told.
Conspiracy with Earl Benazet.
And they were going somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 to 14,000 miles an hour.
They covered the distance from Columbus to Detroit in something like the equivalent of about 20,000 miles an hour.
It's the mothership of all conspiracy programs.
Conspiracy Theory, every Friday evening at 7 p.m. with your host, Earl Benazet, right here on KDHS 98.9 FM, the Desert Heat.
Tired of those annoying calls? Afraid to deposit money into your bank account? Facing foreclosure? Do bill collectors have you feeling like a bad person?
Yeah.
Put a stop to it all with one visit with Lisa at Immigration Court Services of the Desert. Serving Desert Hot Springs since 2001, Immigration Court Services of the Desert is your one-stop shop for all your legal needs. Bankruptcy, divorce, child custody and visitation, evictions, small claims, immigration and notary public. Give Lisa a call, 760-333-6852. That's 760-333-6852. Se habla en español.
We are
98.9
FM, the Desert Heat.
And we're back with Conspiracy with my special guest, Bill Burns. And I got to hear the rest of this.
Well, so let's say that you... Now, this is like how this works, okay? And again, it doesn't take the world of people to do this. It just takes it being done right. So let's just say that one of the things you want... So now you know that you've got explosive charges planted in your building. You now reinsure it, okay? And you reinsure it to the max. So you're going to get paid for this thing by an outside insurance company. And it's perfect. And when nobody's watching you, you can do this. Now what you need is a way to get an event, right? And you're not going to create the event yourself. You're going to wait for some event that allows you to pull those charges to blow that building up. So what you then do, is you go forward and another group, right, another group of business people are actually underway in advance culling the voters, right? Mm-hmm. They can disenfranchise voters so that in key states, and again, this is not rocket science. I keep saying this. If you want to read how to do this, read the book Making of the President, 1960, Theodore H. White. Read the book, because in the book it describes how elections are won and lost in America. They're done on precincts. So all you've got to do is find key precincts in key places, and if you do that, then you could find out how to control precincts, control states. States control the electors. Electors control the presidential election. Not hard to do. So you get this. You get your guy in. They have told us. The Taliban told us. The Germans told us. The Spanish told us. The Israelis told us in advance that there was an attack underway. They were planning it. So everybody knew this, right? In fact, toward the end of the Clinton administration, coming up on the millennial celebrations for the year 2000, Bill Clinton said they were rolling up sleeper cells. They knew about Osama bin Laden. Mm-hmm. They were rolling up sleeper cells throughout Canada and the United States. They were trying to come over the Canadian border, on the East Coast, over the West Coast, and we were just rolling them up. Suddenly, an event this massive, involving this many planes, can take place literally under the radar. It wasn't even under the radar. We saw this happening, and there was no response. They hit the buildings. Buildings designed, because we knew that one of the dangers of having buildings this tall were impacts from airplanes. We knew that. How did we know that? Because it already happened. Planes had hit the Empire State Building. This again, recorded fact. So we knew that the one thing you don't want is for a plane to hit a building, and after one impact, the whole building collapses. So we knew these buildings were built to withstand that. Engineers have said that, okay? Mm-hmm. So this is not like, oh, the Japanese didn't plan for a tsunami, for an earthquake of that magnitude, nor did they ever plan for a tsunami of that magnitude. They didn't. It's true. We did, because it had happened that planes had hit buildings before. So therefore, there were all these kinds of safety features. What there was that after we knew this was coming, and we knew it was underway, we knew these guys were in the country. I'll give you another example. We knew these guys were in the country. We knew because in June of 2001, there were a group of people getting their pilot's licenses in or pilot training in Fort Lauderdale in South Florida.
Right.
They were looking for $650,000 to buy a crop dusting business, and they were, this is in my new book called Suicidal Mass Murderers that was out back in March. They were looking, they were carrying weaponized anthrax because they showed up at an emergency room at, I think it was St. Peter's Hospital, I'm not sure, down in Fort Lauderdale. With anthrax burns on their legs. The FBI deep sixed that investigation. It went nowhere. 6 months or so 4 months before 9/11, we knew we had people who were not supposed to be in this country, their visas had expired, who were carrying anthrax around. It was reported to the FBI, okay? Mm. I have that record.
But one question, why were 27 biological scientists killed?
Right, and why is it still going on? Molecular biologists are being killed. There are various, well, there are two reasons, two basic reasons. One, they're either, remember the mummy, the mummy's curse, the mummy's hand,
right.
When the people who buried Kharis the mummy, mm-hmm. all those burial workers were killed by guards, and the guards themselves were killed. What's the best way to keep a secret? You kill the person who knows the secret. That's simple. Mm-hmm. So let's just say these molecular biologists have been aggressively working on various slate cleaners, on various ways to manipulate certain kinds of organic chemicals, biological chemicals, to suddenly create mass plagues that can't be stopped. But you don't want these people walking around saying, oh my God, look at what I did. I was like one of the Nazi doctors at the concentration camps. Oh, it's so terrible what I did. No, you killed them.
Yeah.
They do the work, yeah. And you kill them. That's one. Or two, these are doctors who have stumbled across these things in the course of their work. Well, if they stumbled across it, now they know the secret, so kill them.
Right.
Right? So here's a case where the United States is warned. The Bush administration is warned about an impending attack, warned by the Taliban. And so you get the perfect storm. We get to invade Afghanistan. We get to wipe the Taliban out of government. We get to rebuild the World Trade Center. He gets, whoever the owner is, we know who it is, out of servicing, he gets his insurance money. They pull down Building 7, which wasn't even impacted, right? They pull that down. And then the whole thing wiped away by this fabulous commission, like the Warren Commission, whose job it is to cover it up.
And well, I hate to say, Bill, we just ran out of time. But, we need to have another show to finish this.
We will.
Anyway, it's been great having you as a guest, Bill. And maybe in the next couple of weeks or a month or so, I can have you back on because we need to finish this, obviously.
Okay, folks can find me at www.ufomag.com. Go subscribe to the magazine or come on to get a free sample issue.
Thank you very much for being on my show, Bill. Have a good night.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Bye-bye.